Look at me.
Sure.
Look at me.
Sure.
I'm the captain now.
That's right. That's right. Cal isn't here. And trust me, if he could have been here, he would have been, because he had the Warriors winning in six. You are listening to Dead in Sports. My name is Ken. And on the show, filling in for Cal this week, will be Q, the Sixth Man. And we have the usual with Brandon and Ralph. But yeah, if Kyle could have been here, he would have been, because he had the Warriors winning along with Brandon. And he would have loved to have bragged about how he got that right. For those of you that didn't listen to the show, I had the Cavs in sits. Ralph had the Cavs, and so did Q. They had the Cavs winning as well. So on this week's episode, we're going to talk about the finals. We're going to talk about LeBron's legacy, of course. We're going to talk about who has next. We're going to talk about ways that the Cavs could possibly improve their roster to, compete. And we're going to talk about whether or not the Warriors are the greatest team of all time. And we're going to also kind of discuss a little bit about getting into the mythology of MJ as well. So, yeah, man, I'm not going to hold you guys up any longer. So let's go ahead and get into the show.
You know, I think, man, it's unfortunate. Like, I'm torn, man, with the way the finals went with this team. I sat there and I was going to turn the game off. I didn't even want to watch it, man. It was just making me sick. It was just weak to me, dog. Like, I just thought the whole thing was just, it was like, you're supposed to do this. And I'm sitting there watching KD just score. And it was, I think the one saving grace was, it really was all KD. Like, we saw Curry became a shell of himself again, you know, and he wanted no parts of it. And then finally he started to kind of get
going. He had 34 points, Ken. Only missed 4 shots all game, but I'll digress.
And the first couple of, when the Cavs put the pressure on them, Curry wanted no part of it. He had no fight in him.
One bad game out of 5. One bad game out of 5. You ain't too rough on cats, Ken. Like, you come on, man. Like, let's be honest. KD was the driving factor as to why Golden State was so dominant in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And it's whack.
And Steph is the starter. He's their engine, man. Like, KD, he
became a role player.
He had the same type of poise and calm. Get the fuck out of here, Ken. Be quiet like 2 seconds, man. What the hell are you talking about? KD is the calm in that storm. And then what Steph is for that squad, he's the hail. It's like, damn, man, it was bad enough. Oh, now we're going to get the hail? That's what Steph does for that team. He pushes that team. He's the one that controls the tempo. You know what you're going to get from KD, sometimes Clay. And then when Steph just it's just more on top of everything else. Like, look, Steph physically is not dominant. Physically. Doesn't mean that he's not a dominant basketball player, which is the reason why I always say little guys need medium to large size guys on their squad to win chips. That's what we see. Right. Little guys like CP, you're not going to win no chip by yourself. Kyrie, you're not going to win no chip. Point guard is not going to win no chip. They need a small forward, power forward, or center on the squad that is also as dominant or if not better of a player. And that's what we've seen. When Steph starts going with KD, who's going to truly beat that? As a dynamic duo, I think the only team or the only squad that can do that is Cleveland. Their dynamic duo can match Golden State's dynamic duo. And we saw that. We saw that. The difference is everybody else, right? Because Tristan and K-Love, they cancel out Draymond. The difference in the squad is Klay. How many times have we seen a game or a series where LeBron James is averaging or getting triple doubles and he doesn't look like the best player on the court? How many times does that happen? It doesn't matter who he plays against. Kawhi Leonard, that, you know, people say he's the best player in the league. Paul George, which is one of the top small forwards in the league. Gordon Hayward, another top small forward. LeBron makes all those guys look like little boys. But KD, though? Come on. KD washed them out.
But KD has always done that to him, Ralph. You know this. And we all know this. KD and LeBron has always went toe-to-toe and statistically have put up great numbers. It has always kind of come down to the others. Wade, Bosch, whatever else he had on that Heat team. This year, you know, it was Curry, Draymond, Klay Thompson, and that system. And that's where Cleveland you know what, man? Tyrone Lue, however you say it. He won a championship off the back of LeBron James last year. He had a chance to show that he can coach, and what do we get? We got a 23-23 team in the second half that was undisciplined, that played no defense, who we all know that Lue is supposed to be a defensive coach. That was proven. And this strategy he had in the play in the finals, and I understood, but it just wasn't working. They get out on a fast break, and you just going to foul them? Like, come on. Like, he got out-coached, out-classed, out everything.
Nah, Ken, you're way off base.
I was saying they should have fired Tyrone Lue. Check my tweets. I said it during the regular season.
That's cool. I don't care what you said when you said it. When you wrong, you wrong. First off,
I'm not wrong.
Okay, Lue gotta go. That's your opinion. I'll stick to mine. When you look at the Cleveland roster, outside of LeBron James, who is an elite defender? I'll wait.
It doesn't matter. No,
answer the question, Ken.
Who's an elite defender on Golden State? They got like two.
KD, Draymond, Klay.
KD.
And they have a rim protector. I'm not going to say that JaVale McGee is an elite player or elite defender, because obviously once they start putting them in pick and roll, Steve Kerr didn't put
them
back out.
They are committed to playing defense, Ralph. That's the difference.
KD's a rim protector, dude.
Exactly. Like, and KD is an elite wing defender, is he not?
It's the Matrix, man.
They were committed to playing defense. Their defensive principles and strategies were on point.
I understand that. Golden State's been playing defense since the last 5-6 years, since Mark Jackson instilled that in them. So I give them that. But their personnel defensively is better than Cleveland's defensive personnel. Hands down, it's not even close. We talking about Richard Jefferson is a defensive stopper for Cleveland. Come on, man. Come on, Ken.
I mean, dude.
This fool begged to guard KD.
Literally, if you put Andre Iguodala on Cleveland, he might be their second best defender, dude. Like, he literally might be.
Exactly. You know what?
Iguodala is their sixth man for Golden State. And you see how he plays meaningful minutes, dropping 20 off the bench? You can't get that.
Exactly. So we're talking about KD's an elite defender. Draymond's an elite defender. Klay's an elite defender. Iguodala is still a top defender in this league. Dude, they got four guys right there that I named. Cleveland only has one and a half with Shump. Half.
What about Tristan? What about JR?
Hey, Tristan. Hey, look, man. Look, he talking about he want to give Chloe five, baby. Yo, they need to trade him.
Get him up out of there, please.
But look, with Cleveland, I think Ty Lue, I think he could have made some more personnel adjustments. We said it on this program here that Derek Williams needed more minutes at least to see what he can bring to this series. Lue didn't make that adjustment. That's cool. Fine.
They let Patrick McCall play on Golden State, but Derek Williams couldn't crack the rotation.
That's what I'm saying.
Patrick McCall out of UNLV is a rookie, and he played meaningful minutes. Two back-to-back baskets to widen the margin. I think it was an 8-point game. He made it a 12-point game. Two back-to-back baskets.
Yeah, man. I also think that. I think that is extremely difficult to create a system that works, right? You were talking about being out coached and this, that, and the third. Okay, Ken, I give you that. But name me a great coach that LeBron has had ever in his career. I'll wait on that too, because I know you don't have an answer.
I understand exactly. That. He hasn't had the benefit of playing with the Popovich or Phil Jackson.
Exactly.
And he now Kerr.
He had his Hall of Fame coach. He's made all of his coaches.
Okay, Hall of
he's
Fame.
Like a coach hasn't taught him anything. He's made every guy. So when you made the comment that, you know, Ty Lue rolled LeBron's back, you're damn right. Every damn one of his coaches is rolling LeBron's back to whatever type of win percentage or playoff win percentage or whatever.
But Lue got a lot of credit, Ralph.
Lue's not getting the – I'm not giving Lue the credit. I'm giving all of the credit to LeBron. But what I'm saying is that Lue as a manager has done a good job. Now, I'm putting him in that – like after this year and after this series and seeing what we've seen, I'm starting to put him in the Scott Brooks category where you can manage these guys. You can assemble a top team. But can you make them a championship team? Because when you have an isolation player like Kyrie, and then you have a ball dominant player like LeBron, it's difficult for you to change what they do best because they're always going to rely on what they do best. So, right. So I think it's gonna have to come from somebody bigger than Ty Lue.
I got a question for you.
Uh huh.
Do you think that LeBron likes being as ball dominant as he is, or do you think he would prefer to play in a system that could take advantage of what he does best, which is basically see the whole court and pass and make everybody better?
I think he would prefer to be ball dominant. Name me a point guard, and I'm putting him on a point guard level in this regard. Name me a point guard, pass first, score, whatever, that doesn't want the ball. I'll wait.
I don't know, Ralph. I don't know. I think he would like for the game to be easier.
I agree that he would like for the game to be easier, but for LeBron, he just wants guys that can hit buckets.
You know,
easier for Bron.
I think we're missing one side of what we're trying to get at, and I think that is this. And I want everyone to chime in on this. I think this is an important thing that we need to discuss. When we talk about LeBron James, LeBron James, in my opinion, is probably the only player in the NBA whose opinion on signing players is one of the utmost important things to management. And people call LeBron GM, people call LeBron, you know, the manager and all that stuff. And he'll say, oh, yeah, go give me JR and Shump, and that'll happen. He'll say, oh, we need more help, and they'll sign Darren Williams. They'll try to sign Bogut. They'll try out Larry Sanders, you know, because LeBron, his word, you know, it's very much a respectable thing. And you should respect LeBron's work because he knows what he needs to win a championship. But do we think that there is either some blame or maybe some short-sightedness on LeBron trying to max out the contracts of people like J.R. Smith, trying to give people like Tristan Thompson $80 million? Yes. But hold on. Let me finish, though. Because what we're seeing is, and I know what people's going to say, he only did that because that was when KD was in Golden State. He had no way of knowing that was going to happen. But at the same time, do we still think that maybe it was a little short-sighted to think that those guys were enough at that time? Because even before then, they still hadn't come back from 3-1. That was that offseason. You still think that $80 million, the $110 for K-Love, the $60 million for Shump, the I don't even remember if it was 80 something for JR. It was way too much.
No, I think 82 for Tristan Thompson.
Yep, yeah, $80 million, man.
Do you think that there was some short-sightedness and maybe LeBron kind of relinquished optionality there?
No. And the reason, I got two reasons for that. Number one, those guys earned their contracts, right? And again, LeBron doesn't sign the checks. It's up to the GM in the front office to negotiate the best deal for the organization, right? Because in business, it's all about compromise. Two people are not going to be happy. If a deal comes down and both guys are angry, that means it was a good deal because both guys had to get something up. And if you're acquiescing to every LeBron James need, then that's a problem on the organization because there has to be a little bit of a separation. Now, in terms of the roster, I'll ask the simple question. If Golden State didn't have KD, does this Cleveland team beat a KD-less Golden State Warriors? I think so. So
I don't know
that.
I do.
Let me get the fuck out of here, man. With Matt Barnes,
I truly don't know due to the fact that Draymond Green was suspended and they lost their rim protector.
We're not talking about last year. We're talking about this year. Bringing back the same squad, maybe a couple of obviously some guys not going to be there. Festus Ezeli because he went to Portland and stuff like that. But the main guys, take out KD, insert Harrison Barnes. Do they beat Cleveland? Hell no! Because
this
they
was
had
all
nobody
KD.
To stop Barnes.
This was all KD, man.
Exactly. So for me, no, LeBron didn't have short-sightedness and him telling the organization, sign my guys because we need them to win. Now when KD goes to Golden State, it's like, holy crap, we ain't got nobody else for KD. I got to do everything plus guard this guy. And they got three guys that they could throw at me. We got one guy that we could really throw at him. That's an issue. That's not short-sightedness. That happened after the fact.
But at the same time, Rev, like, you know, JR, you knew what JR was. You know what Shumpert was. Tristan was the one that you know would go to war for. He had a bad series. Against, you know, this year, but he showed up last year. He helped turn that series around.
And then JR showed up too. And finally,
yeah, JR did show up last year.
Yeah, he showed up
in game
he showed
seven.
Up the last two
he
games.
Shows up late. He shows up late to the party.
But game seven is the most important game of the finals, dude. What are you talking
about?
But they
shouldn't have. The point is, if he would have showed up at the very beginning, if he wasn't on CP time, they wouldn't have been in that hole.
But Ken. That's fine. Wait. Hold on, B. I'm going to shut all this down. What is J.R. Smith's role on the team? What is he?
Right now, he's playing defense.
He's a role player. You don't expect this guy to give you 20-some points, 4-5 games out of a series, Ken. Come on, be better than
If J.R. would have showed up and when they didn't have Kevin Love and when they didn't have Kyrie, they would have beaten Golden State in year one when LeBron was going to work. If Shumpert would have showed up, they didn't show up. That's why I picked them. I just knew for a fact that they were going to show up and do something because LeBron just needed them to contribute. That was year one. Year two, he was MIA until they had nothing left, and then he started to show up. Like he had a couple of big shots in game seven. This year, he was gone until the last two games. You cannot.
Yeah, I knew JR was gone this year.
It's a waste of money, dog. Shumpert is known for like at least two or three boneheaded plays a game.
Dude, the thing is, let me interject here. The reason why I believe that there is some short-sightedness, not like completely, but there's some short-sightedness on LeBron's part, because if you want something completely non-contingent on Golden State adding KD, is you signed Shumpert to what I believe it was something like $40 million or $60 million. I cannot remember. Somebody please fact check that for me. All I know is that it was way too much for what I think Iman Shumpert brings to a team. If you're LeBron James, what was his number one drum that he was beating this year? Playmaker. I need a backup point guard. You let Matthew Dellavedova go to Milwaukee. I'm not saying Matthew Dellavedova is, you know, this amazing backup point guard. All I know is that there was a narrative going around that Matthew Dellavedova gave Steph Curry problems in the finals in 2015. All I know is that Matthew Dellavedova can hit an open three occasionally from time to time, and he can play some defense from time to time. And he's a very capable passer in those, he knows how to play with a LeBron James. So you see him fitting in Milwaukee because he have a similar player in Giannis who is a point forward. So he knows how to play with the Giannis. So I believe giving Iman that contract, and I believe some of the money that JR got could have went towards either re-signing Dellavedova or going out there and finding that backup point guard who maybe could have suited you better than a Dellavedova did. I do believe that there is some short-sightedness on LeBron's part because we just talked about OKC being short-sighted and not going over the luxury tax. Now the Cleveland Cavaliers have gone over the $132 million luxury tax by a mile, and they are trying to talk about how we need to add more pieces. The only thing that I see that they can add later on this offseason, aside from trading Kevin Love for Paul George, which I don't see that happening, the only thing that they could probably add is a marginal player like a Thabo Sefolosha for $5 million. And that's not getting you over the hump against the Warriors. And I'll let somebody interject now.
There's other guys. Rudy Gay. I think he helps move that needle. I think he will be their version of Iguodala.
You think Rudy? All right. Let me there. Do you think you truly believe that Rudy Gay is taking that contract with Cleveland?
A mid-level to compete for championships? Yes. At this point,
they don't have the money to do that.
They have the mid-level exception.
You really think that they're going? I'm not even talking about his skill as a player. You think he's going to take a mid-level exception to be on Cleveland where he could go to Houston and get more money?
Yeah, because Houston ain't making it out the West.
But it has nothing to do with.
Here's the thing. We don't know what is in Rudy Gay's heart. If you want to win, you'll do David West. I'll take a minimum. Right? But we don't know what's important to Rudy Gay. If winning is important to Rudy Gay, he'll take the mid-level exception for a contending team. That's just what it is. If he's about his money, then he's going to go get money. There's a whole bunch of teams that got money. Philly got money. Denver got money. There's teams that got money that could just go sign people. So at the end of the day, we don't know what's in his heart. But, Ken, to your point, do you not think he's an Iguodala type of guy? Like, can you win a championship as Iguodala as your best player? But what if he's your fifth, sixth, seventh best player? Yeah, that helps move the needle. That's another body you could throw on KD. That's another guy that can handle the rock, dribble, pass, shoot, get a rebound, and push it. That's what Golden State. See, look, whenever there's a new benchmark in the league, you have to try to beat that benchmark. Golden State's benchmark is extremely high. You know why? Because it's not just about experience with these guys. When you look at previous championship teams, they're typically older. They have an average age of over 30 years of age. Look at Golden State's roster and tell me what their average age is. I'll wait, but I already know it. So they're in their 20s. All their guys are in their 20s. This is not common for NBA. So you got to try to beat these guys. It's extremely difficult. Now, in hindsight, it's always 2020, and I'm pretty sure that we recorded this as well. For me, I wouldn't have traded for K-Love. I would have signed K-Love in the offseason. Imagine if they would have had Wiggins. That's the thing that Golden State has been able to do. Draft guys, develop them, then sign a free agent or two to help push your guys over the top. That's how you build. That's the reason why there's a draft. If you look at all of LeBron's teams, he has never played with an up-and-coming young player. He's always either had super established guys. The youngest up-and-coming player that he's played with is Kyrie. But imagine if he would have had a Wiggins and still would have been able to have K-Love right now and Tristan and Kyrie. We're talking about something completely different. But what Cleveland – where they're not going to be able to dig themselves out of this hole is the fact that they cannot get young talent. That's always at a premium.
Let me ask you this, people. Because what I have in front of me right here is just the projections for the mid-level exception coming into 2018. Mm-hmm. They're projecting it's going to be $5.2 million, and that's not enough to sign a guy like a Joe Ingles or a Luke Mbamute or a CJ Miles. I highly doubt Rudy Gay is going to say, "All right, I'll take that." And plus, the money doesn't work out either. But to your young talent point, I posed this question on Twitter. I didn't get a lot of feedback. I didn't get much feedback on this. If you're the Cavaliers, and I'm gonna ask the same question for Golden State next. If you're the Cavaliers, do you trade Kevin Love because apparently Sacramento is shopping the 5th and 10th pick? If you're the Cavaliers, do you trade Kevin Love for 5 and 10? Either take those two players and hopefully that they can give you some NBA ready minutes now, or do you flip those 5 and 10 for a guy like a Paul George, or do you flip that for another star that is enticed by a GM that's enticed by 5 and 10 because Sacramento wants to move up to do something special, but if they have a star waiting for them like a Kevin Love, I don't know if the Kings are smart enough to turn that down.
I think that the number 5th pick, Cleveland could get somebody that is going to step in right away and contribute. That number 10 pick is where, if I'm Cleveland, I'm not happy about that. And then the thing is, how long is that number five pick going to take to even reach a Kevin Love status? That's not going to be enough. They still need another guy in addition to that draft pick. So I think where Cleveland is right now, what they need to do is they just need to make trades.
They need to move some.
I think everybody is tradable outside of Kyrie and Bron. Right. I think that they need to move Tristan because right. Tristan showed, especially in these finals, he had, I want to say he had a like 10 or 11 rebounds through the first three games combined. He right. had finally a breakout game in game four where he had 10 rebounds. That's right. unacceptable. If you pay a guy $80 million to rebound and he can't rebound, you got to trade him because now he is a major liability. And this is not like a guy that can hit 15-footers consistently.
Part of that was coaching, too, though. He became a focal point for Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr even said it.
Yeah, he did because Tristan is a big reason as to why. Look, the whole time during the finals, what did I say that kept – it just jumped off the page. Second chance points and rebounding. Golden State is not supposed to out rebound or out second chance point score.
That's coaching too, also. Like, positional, like to be in position to out rebound Tristan Thompson if you're, you know, if you're Draymond, because Draymond has to worry about K-Love, but Draymond was sagging off K-Love a little bit to be able to go and rebound. And Iguodala and the wings were coming in to rebound also on gang rebounding. That's also some coaching there too. But like obviously we're more in, you know, talking about what can Cleveland do to compete next year. I mean you have
Richard Jefferson like, gotta go, Shumpert, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson.
Just dump the whole bench.
Everybody B. Keep Derek Williams. You can get him for nothing. And Korver, keep Korver.
There's no need to keep Darren Williams.
Keep Korver.
No, not Derek. Derek, the young buck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think there could be a move with Tristan going to Phoenix and trying to bring back Tyson Chandler and Eric Bledsoe. I think that that's a good move for them. Obviously, you get your rim protector and Tyson. You get a backup PG that allows you to go small with him and Kyrie both on the floor at the same time. And Eric Bledsoe is no chump on defense. When healthy, obviously, that's his biggest concern. I think that you also got to look at trading K-Love as well. If that returns you a Carmelo and or a Paul George, then you got to make that move because – the way that Golden State is built, they don't play inside out. They play outside in, right? And you have to have perimeter defenders at a great to elite level. Not even good, because they're going to make good defenders look like bums out there. You got to have Mello? Great. No, not for that aspect. Because
I would give love for Melo. You would give love for Melo?
I don't know. I would have to actually sit down and look at that and really think about how. But here's something else to think about, right? Like, realistically, you can get the top five defenders and you still can't stop Golden State because great offense is always going to be great defense. So to beat Golden State, you got to get timely stops, but you also have to score. Carmelo gives them that scoring. Right? So I don't know if it's that bad of a move. Yeah, he can't play defense like that, you know, but at the end of the day, he could go get 30. 30 is easy for that guy.
I just like Paul George better.
I do too. I'm not saying I don't.
Paul George thing pop up anyway? This is news to me.
Dude, this literally came out of nowhere, and I just don't know why.
They've been talking about 2 weeks.
I don't know why people think this is going to happen. Because the money doesn't make sense. Motivation.
The money don't make sense.
So like the motivation for Indiana makes no sense unless you're dangling something really enticing in front of them. And I don't think they're jumping, you know, to lick their chops for Kevin Love. I don't see that. And plus, Paul George is a free agent in 2018. What's he going to do? What, just win a ring and then bounce to LA? Like I don't. It doesn't. The narrative doesn't make sense, and the money's just not there, and the trades are just not there.
They're saying that the Warriors can win the next two or three.
Right.
Is there anybody out there that could stop them?
Nope.
I don't know. I truly don't know, because I think Utah is really on the come up. And I think Utah is probably the team right now that's presently constructed. If they can re-sign Gordon Hayward, which I don't know, that's very much doubt. I don't know.
He's going to Boston.
It's very much in doubt. I think he goes to Miami, just from my personal opinion. But if they can re-sign him, perhaps, because I like Gobert. He's getting better every year. I love Rodney Hood's game. I think he's probably the most underrated pick from that draft. Gordon Hayward's a star. You have guys like George Hill, but they have to re-sign him, you know what I'm saying, and the money doesn't work. So it's weird. Now, if you take a CP, put him on the Spurs, I think you can challenge Golden State, take him to six, on a maybe seven, if Kawhi's game has another level to it, maybe seven. But, like, at the end of the day, I don't think there's anybody that's like, oh, yeah, this is a move that can clearly put them ahead of Golden State. In my opinion, Zach Randolph is, like, right there. Like, he's those slow. Are the type of guys that, like, he's very slow, but that rebounding is still there off the bench. And they need some help. Just like they need that grit guy, in my opinion. And Cleveland thought they had one in Tristan Thompson, but I don't think he was a real grit guy. I think Zach Randolph.
He's Canadian.
I truly think Zach Randolph is about that life. Obviously, we've seen it. You know, his career over through and through. He's proved it. So I think that Zach Randolph is a guy who definitely could go to Cleveland and give them some help off the bench just as big, but it's those wings, man. It's those wings. But we obviously talked about Paul George earlier. Let's just say this. They have to subtract Kevin Love. That's his situation if they want to add Paul George. It has to happen because
Kevin
that's the
Love
only
thing. Kevin Love got to go.
Kevin Love has to go.
Got to go, man.
So let me ask you guys this. Who needs to go more? K Love or Tristan? Okay. We on the same page.
Tristan going.
Tristan gotta go.
Or to lose more, Tristan.
Wait, say that again.
I said, who can you afford to lose more? I believe the answer is Tristan. Who needs to go more? That's a tough question because it's like Kevin Love can space the floor, and it's like. Thing is, though, is that if you can't do that, which we've seen, he's had that game five showed what we need from him. Six threes. We need that from him. Like, you need to be doing that every game.
He had his moments.
Yeah, and he gets to the finals, and it's just like, where are you at? But then he has that one game, like, oh, there he is. That's what he's supposed to be here.
Then why
are you even on the team, dude?
But here's he showed more of a fight this finals than he has in the last final because he didn't get a chance to play in the first one. But I like the attitude he showed, like his confidence was up. But let's be real, like he got coached off the court a couple of times and Lou couldn't even play Tristan Thompson. At least he could play Kevin Love because at times there was Kevin Love just checked himself because when he settled down and actually got into his move and attempt and score and got into a good post position, he scored. But whenever he rushed his shots, he panicked and freaked. He missed everything. So if he could just settle down, he'll be okay. Tristan Thompson, they couldn't even play him at all. Tristan Thompson, they couldn't play. Shannon Fry, they couldn't play at all. Richard Jefferson begged to get on the court to guard KD for what? I have no idea. Because he couldn't guard him. At all. He was just out there. And he needs to go, too. Get him out of that. They should have let him retire.
Dude, I don't know, man. Like, honestly, like, the guys I'm seeing that they could add, like, even at 40 years old, I still think Vince Carter might be too much money for them to bring in. Like, I don't know. If LeBron calls him up, yo, Vince.
No, man, that's Richard Jeff part two, man. Nah.
And the thing is, I do think Vince is actually still a capable player in the NBA, which is crazy.
He's always been a better offensive player than Richard Jefferson, even when they both played in New Jersey. Like, nah, man.
Yeah.
Where VC is right now, could he help Cleveland? Yes, but he doesn't move the needle against Golden State.
If you can
trade Tristan, keep K Love, and add another offensive weapon, mm-hmm. that, to me, that's the move. I wouldn't trade K-Love first. I would definitely see what the market is for Tristan.
Right.
Because K-Love is a viable commodity, man. Like, how many guys in the NBA at that position can do what K-Love does? There's not many guys. He's valuable. Maybe not that much to Cleveland based off of their matchup with the Warriors, but that's another weapon that you would want out there. Somebody else that Steve Kerr has to be like, hey, we can't leave him.
It gives you a matchup advantage if you know how to use it right, Lou.
It's facing the floor. That's all it is. Like, it's facing the floor. You, like you can't, you know, clog the middle for LeBron because you have K-Love out in the wing. Like, that's understood.
Exactly.
For people, you know that GMs, there are a lot of stupid GMs, but they're GMs who, you know, aren't that damn stupid. In the East, there's not one GM, not even the Sixers are doing it. I don't care because the Cavaliers don't have first round picks to trade. So there's not a soul in the East that is going to help Cleveland acquire a Paul George for a Tristan Thompson.
Wait, hold on, Q. I'm not saying trade. Because you're 100%. I don't care if I had Tristan as a GM or if I had Paul George. Somebody calls me trading one for the other, I'm like, hell no, you crazy as hell. No, I'm not talking about making that move. Again, let me go back to the Phoenix move. If you trade Tristan, are able to bring back Tyson Chandler, so you just replace what you gave up, and you bring back an Eric Bledsoe, you can play a lineup of Bledsoe, Kyrie, Braun, and K-Love out there if need be, right? And if you sign a Rudy Gay to the mid-level, to me, that's more of a viable lineup against what Golden State has to offer versus what they had this year. That's number one. Number two is it helps out Phoenix because in this draft, I think they need to take a point guard so they can move Eric Bledsoe now, right? And then you want, if you have let's say they take De'Aaron or whoever, right? One of these fly point guards out of this draft. You take them, then you have Devin Booker at your starting two. You need a big man that can go get you some boards and get you second chance points. So basketball-wise, it makes sense for Phoenix. And again, there's other options, but to me, I like Phoenix because even if you can't get Bledsoe, you can still get Brandon. Phoenix has lot of little guys that you can that Cleveland can use. There's a lot of teams, just like you mentioned the Kings. You know, there's a lot of teams that are not contending that have guys that a contending team can use. And I think that any team in the NBA can use a guy like Tristan. Right? So
I'll give you that.
So to me, that's the reason why he's the first guy that's on the trading block. Now, if I have to throw in the Love, I got to get a Paul George in return. There's no way that I'm giving up K-Love and not getting an all-star, a bona fide guaranteed all-star. There's just no way. I have to get that guy if I'm giving up K-Love.
Here's what I want to know, because this has been floating out there a lot. Is this the greatest team ever? This Golden State team. You guys think this is the greatest team ever? Did LeBron just lose to the greatest team ever?
Dude, like, I hate questions like this because it doesn't take into account that basketball changes over eras. I think this is the greatest team probably of the 2010s, hands down. But like, if we're comparing this team and we're putting this team in the 1990s against the Bulls, I don't know, because the game is slow. I mean, the game is faster actually. And they get away with much more physical play. So you can put KD on his ass and not get ejected, unlike, you know, Draymond should have been in game five. But at the same time, I do think this is probably one of the greatest team top five that I've seen, you know, just, you know, play basketball, just talking like tape, not like, you know, me seeing the Showtime Lakers because I wasn't alive, but just seeing people play. This is definitely top five for me. But we can't talk about this is the greatest team ever because eras matter, dude. Like, the game is much more faster. People are going out to three-point lines in transition. Like, this is not the game where you go to the rack all the time. It's not the 90s no more. It's not even the early 2000s where it's more of an ISO type game. I don't know.
Doesn't that lend itself to the point that they are? Because if we're trading threes for twos, right, just like Magic said that his Showtime Lakers would sweep Golden State, I don't know how you do that, because I know that can't nobody guard Kareem, right? Like, we know that because he's number one scorer all time. But he scores 2 points where these they got three guys that can go get 3 points for every two you get. How do you beat that? How do you beat that? I just don't know. And I've seen a lot of basketball. I'm not going to say they're the all-time greatest team, but they're definitely in the conversation because an all-time great team has to do it over the course of years. You have to have a run. And that's this true. Is for this team, this is the beginning of their run. So if they can dominate the NBA for the next 2 to 3 years, then yes, we have to put them up there. But if we're talking just this 1 year, they can compete with any of the all-time greats.
I think so, too.
And I'll put it to you like this. There's always a supremely unique player or two on these all-time great lists. Name me another 7-footer shooting guard on any one of these all-time greatest teams. Name me another player on any one of these all-time greatest teams that has 30 to 35 foot a 3-point shooting range.
Oh no.
Right. So to me, they're up there. I'm just not going to say they're the greatest, but yeah, they are in the conversation.
They're definitely there. Definitely, yeah, like,
of course, if you list, you know, the top 10 greatest teams of all time, you know, I have no issue. You know, top 10, top 15. Like, if you just did a list of greatest teams of all time, each year. Now, you know, like, each year, like, you know, like the 96 Bulls, the 86 Celtics. Like, if you list, like, the top, you know, the greatest teams of all time, I have no issue putting this 2017 Golden State on that list. I mean, now, where I'll rank them at, that I don't know. But I don't have an issue putting this team in the, you know, top 10, top 15 greatest teams of the NBA history.
You know, it's not just a run, but it's kind of like a culmination, right? Like the 96 Bulls, it was a whole bunch of years before that 96 Bulls, and then there was a couple of years after that 96 Bulls team for them to show why that one particular team was the one of the greatest teams. So to me, like I was saying previously, this starts Golden State's run. What if next year these boys, I'm not saying that it's going to happen or whatever, but what if they go some ridiculousness like 80-2? What if they do something like that? And we're talking about this year was a great team. Shit, they go 80-2. That's, man.
Think about this, y'all. And I want to, like, respond to, like, Ken's point is, like, think about this. This is KD's first year in this system. And by all intents and purposes, from when I play basketball, the first team, the first time I'm playing with a new team, that's the year I'm trying to get comfortable with them. And this is KD's first year. And I never played in the NBA. I never will. But I know that there are just certain things about basketball that remain true for whatever level you're on. And I know that KD is going to be way more comfortable with this team next year than he even was this year. So the potential to be even better next year is very much possible. It's very much possible. And plus, to FIFO's point, in my opinion, the only stretch four I can name of any era outside of, you know, the 2010s, is a Kukoc. Like, Kukoc is the first stretch four I know of to be able to hit threes and be able to, you know, play the four. Like, that's the first stretch four. And you're telling me that this Golden State team wouldn't wash a lot of these teams? They probably would, because they have shooters. They have guys who are versatile. You have guys you can put on any type of player, and they can switch off. Iguodala can go from guarding twos all the way to guarding, you know, ones and threes. You have Draymond, or 2 through 4. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have versatility.
Man, I remember watching that 72-10 Bulls team, and I just remember every game I would watch, I'd be like, man, I don't think anybody could beat this team.
Yeah.
And I had that same feeling watching this team late in the year. You know, and I'm like, because last year, you know, I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, somebody could get them. This year, I'm like, with the addition of KD, I'm like, I don't see how you beat them.
Yeah.
you know, I just didn't see a way you can beat them. Same thing kind of, you know, until that Heat team, you know, got hurt. I was like, man, how you going to beat these guys? That's how I felt at times watching this. And I think when we think about LeBron, you know, we knew that. For the most part, we knew what the outcome was going to be. We just, you know, felt like LeBron was Superman, and that if there's anybody that could do it, it could have been him. I know this. We need somebody to do something so this whack-ass Golden State team can get out of the picture. We tired of seeing them ruin basketball the way they are. Punk-ass KD. Gonna go to a team that beat him, that he had down 3-1. Nah, man, I'm happy for that dude, man. He needed one because you don't want to go out like that. he was gonna be Melo real quick.
so Melo's the punching bag now.
Hey, man, like we got some people on the. We got some niggas on the clock, B. Like we got some dudes on the clock, man. that's all I'm saying, man. We got to line them up because we got some great superstars that haven't gotten a ring, man. This being one of the greatest teams. This being one of those teams on 2K that you pick to play with. How does this impact LeBron's, like, he's 3-5, and I still think he's great. And I can make an argument for a GOAT. I could do that another day. But is it a stain on your career if you lose to the greatest, one of the greatest teams of all time?
No.
Are you penalized for that?
Oh, no. Same way I didn't penalize Kobe for getting his ass beat by the Celtics. Like, you know, it happens. Like, you lose to...
And by the Pistons.
It happens, dude. However, the Pistons won, I'm looking at him a little more side-eye because he still had Shaq. But anyway... but yeah, man, you face those teams, man, that just like are insurmountable sometimes, dude. Like when I'm like going back to Kobe, I remember when Kobe lost, I believe it was in 5 games, and the last game they got blown out. Like it was like ridiculous. And I remember when Kobe started crying on the sideline, and I was like, damn, wait, what is he supposed to do? And I remember when Lakers fans were crying and feigning their outrage of how are we supposed to beat this? This is unfair. This is a super team. You can't beat this team. And they were right. It's a super team. How are you supposed to beat that? And the thing is, though, is that Laker fans will still say Kobe's top 5, top 3, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying the same thing for LeBron here, dude. LeBron is 33 years old, going on 34. Man got 3 children. You know what I'm saying? He's grown as hell. And his players around him just were not better than Golden State's players. They added, like, they went from being the Splash Brothers, they are now the weapons of Splash Destruction. That's damn it.
Justice League, dog.
That is it. They are the weapons of Splash Destruction. Like, they added an atomic bomb and KD to an already a nuclear situation where Steph Curry can go nuclear anytime. Klay Thompson can go nuclear anytime. Now you have KD, who is an atom bomb. That's ridiculous, Lou. Like you can't beat that. And you got Draymond, who's probably the most versatile defender aside from Kawhi Leonard in the NBA.
And he had a terrible finals.
Yeah, and like he was really bad from three this year. I don't know what was going on with his offense. But, dude, you have a sixth man of the year in Andre Iguodala and a finals MVP in Andre Iguodala. You have a unanimous MVP in Steph Curry and another MVP in Steph Curry. You have an MVP in Kevin Durant. You have a possible defensive player of the year candidate this year in Draymond Green. You have probably, aside from Kawhi Leonard, the second best perimeter defender in the NBA in Klay Thompson. You have coach of the year in Steve Kerr. You have Jerry West, one of the greatest basketball minds on this planet to ever grace this planet. You even have guys on your personnel like Steve Nash who are just consultants. You have literally like everyone to be successful. What are you supposed to do? You're so like the fact that LeBron got one game, I look at that in the same vein of AI when he beat Kobe and Shaq. That's an accomplishment.
And they was undefeated.
You're like, and they were
clearly,
undefeated.
They were clearly overmatched. Everybody knew that Philly had no shot against like
clearly, that's the same situation here, dude. You still have that one player. I remember when Stephen A was on radio in Philly and like my uncles were arguing because he was just talking about how, oh yeah, AI's gonna get you one, but it's over in 5, and everyone in the city was mad as hell. And he was right, it was over in 5, but yeah. AI's gonna get you one. The same way I believe LeBron could get you 2. I picked the Cavs in 6. I was obviously wrong, but I thought LeBron could at least get you 2. But that just shows you how great KD, Steph, Klay, and Draymond, that coaching, that organization, they're ahead of the curve, man. They're just ahead of the curve. And I'm there's no smudge for LeBron to answer your question. No smudge at all, dude. Still nah, top three all the time.
And LeBron played good enough to get you two.
Yeah.
It's not like we have to question, man, where was Bron? It was in Dallas.
Triple-double.
Yeah, he averaged. What else was he supposed to do? Outside of growing about 2-3 inches so that way he could maybe affect KD's shot, there was nothing else that this man could do. He did everything that a superstar player, a leader of an NBA team, franchise, and organization is supposed to do. The man played hella minutes. The man played tired. The man did everything on the court and off the court that you needed from him. Look, here's the thing. The LeBron lovers don't see a problem. The LeBron haters say that this is the reason why he'll never be the GOAT. And then objectionable people, like the majority of us here on this show, will say, look, you have to take everything in context. LeBron did his thing. Yes, it's another L, but if he's losing to one of the greatest teams, which I definitely know that this Golden State Warriors is one of the best teams to ever be assembled, it just is what it is. Look, man, if you want to smear his name because he done lost five finals, it is what it is. That's cool. He been to seven straight, about to go to eight. It's just as simple as that. He is one of the only players that you can put on the same mantle as Michael Jordan, even with the five finals losses. And that's just a testament to what LeBron James is and has always been.
But FIFO, we have to speak on just the finals losses because people look at numbers and then they just that's the entire story. First and foremost, LeBron's second best player in his first finals loss. Fucking Mo Williams, third best player. I already talked about this. Bears out. Best player, Eric Snow. I give him a complete pass. He was a baby the same way I give KD a pass against Miami. A baby. And you're going up against Popovich, in my opinion, the greatest coach of all time, had to play off in 20 years. So you mean to tell me that that's a smudge on his record? Dude, the fact that he even got them to that finals by beating Detroit showed me that that was his league as soon as he did that. So no, smudge. I will give you a smudge for 2011. Yeah, a superstar meltdown. It happened. Okay, I'll give you that. Came back the next year, beat KD. The next year, came back and beat the Spurs. People say that Ray Allen saved his career. Well, if that's the case, then Ron Artest saved Kobe's career too, dude. Like let's not act like this is, you know, not a team sport. Because I remember Kobe going scoreless for 6 minutes in the finals against Boston until Ron Artest hit that shot. So let's not do that. And Pau Gasol, in my opinion, Finals MVP. I'm not gonna say that, but let's move past that. Let's go to the next finals loss. 2014, D Wade knee issues started to break down. Chris Bosh was not playing up to his potential. The roster was not that great. They had Rashard Lewis, Ray Allen. You know, in my opinion, probably could have retired the year before that. But he was still older, and he was just older, man. And they had Odin on the team. It was a good team. They lost by a record margin because Kawhi Leonard's coming out party happened. Tim Duncan wanted revenge for missing a wide open bank shot against Shane Battier. It happens. I'm kind of giving him a pass for that just because of the roster that was around him. But at the same time, okay, all right, two bad losses. All right, then you go back to Cleveland, your first year back, and you lose Kyrie and Kevin Love, that of your big three. You take them to six games. That, like, I'm giving you a pass for that, dude. I just am. People who say that he doesn't deserve a pass from losing his two, answer me this. Is Michael Jordan going to beat the Utah Jazz without Scottie Pippen?
And Jordan didn't win a playoff game without Scottie.
So let's not act like you don't need help in the playoffs. You do. Coaching matters, situation matters, and people around you matter, dude.
KD know that.
Yeah, it happens, all right? So I'll give you 2016. What happens? And then let me flip this point on its head, because people want to give LeBron shit for, you know, 2015. Okay, so LeBron, you know, his fans think that he didn't have help, but he still made it. He should have won if he's the greatest of all time. Okay, the very next year, what happened to Golden State? I mean, well, we lost Draymond and Bogey was hurt. What are we supposed to do? We need our players. Oh, okay. So you need help to win finals, right? The same thing that happened to LeBron in 2015. He didn't have his help. He lost in six games. The fact that he was even able to take you to six games shows you just how great that he is. So, yes, 2016 comes back from 3-1. I'm giving him no pass because he didn't deserve a pass because he won. Then you come back this year. You have to add KD, a top three player in the NBA, transcendent player. And, dude, you have to add all these guys just to beat LeBron James. That's flattering to me if I'm LeBron.
Yeah, by the way.
You got to add an MVP seven-footer release point. Well, people said 12 feet in the air. Come on now. That's flattering to me. Well, so we look at his losses. I'd say only about two. I say three of the five that he's lost are only, you know, the ones that you can critique him for. Like 2015, I'm giving him a complete pass. 2007, I'm giving him a complete pass. 2014, I'm giving him half a pass just because Dwayne Wade was just like not
and
there.
And he showed up. LeBron showed up.
Finals, LeBron has showed up. The only one, only time he has not showed up was in Game 6 versus Dallas.
Yep. And you know, there was something else that Chris Broussard said that it just puts certain things into context. Michael Jordan in his six finals played against 9 Hall of Famers. LeBron has played against 26 Hall of Famers. Yo. He's had a tougher role. Let's be honest. LeBron has played tougher teams. He's had a tougher, maybe not role to get to the finals, but once he gets there, he's playing better comp than Jordan played.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that was the people, what you just said, people, that was with, you know, the Jordan lovers would be like, well, Jordan had a tougher role to the finals than LeBron. But you can definitely argue that, or not really argue, but even make a point that LeBron in the finals has played tougher teams than Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Than Jordan did in the finals.
And who leads the league in NBA playoff elimination games points per game? That'll be LeBron. That'll be at 33 a game. So it's not like he whimpers and cries, you know, himself to sleep when it's a game 6 or a game 7 or an elimination game. LeBron comes to play. How many times have we really seen LeBron be like, damn, man, he just let us down. Like he didn't show up. It happens, but not when it's all on the line. And that's when you're supposed to get paid. That's when your career is made. When it's on the line, we ain't got nothing to lose. Are you going to come out here and be a punk or are you going to be a goat? And
hey,
LeBron
Ralph,
has shown.
What's going to happen is that when he's done playing, and people reflect back on his career, that this run that he's going through, when his legacy is put in context, right? Mm-hmm. The 7 straight finals, taking 2 teams to 4 final appearances, people will at that moment talk about how great he is. Right now, you know, they want to kill him and do this, that, and other because he's actually living in the moment. But when it's all said and done, and we're not seeing anybody else like do that, then people would be like, man, you know what? He may not have won them all. He may not have a winning record. But to be able to get to the finals and stay healthy and to carry the team.
Right.
And to go, I think people are going to look at it differently, but not right now.
Right.
People who never play basketball don't understand hard it is. First off, just win a game of basketball for 4 quarters. And then on top of that, If you were even so blessed to have made it to college, you don't even realize how hard it is to win in college. But the fact that LeBron was able to go straight from high school and be the best player on his team the very first year he got in the league to being able to sustain a level of competition and a level of dominance in his career, he's never been below top 3 small forwards in the NBA. He's never been there.
Never.
It's like as soon as he got into the NBA – he was a top 3 small forward. They were like it was Vince, and then you might be able to get maybe one other guy ahead of him. But LeBron was always top 3 in my opinion. You see those stats from the first year; he was making people better, and of course he had to add things to his game like every other player do.
Exactly, but it got better. His J got better.
You get better. Like people don't understand, man. it's hard just making it to the finals in the first place. That's why Allen Iverson's championship, you know, the one where like he lost, that shit means the most to me. Just seeing him go out there and battle against Shaq and Kobe and getting one game.
Give him the only loss by himself. He pretty much beat Lakers by himself.
And people forget the battle that it took him seven games against Ray Allen, who was putting up 27 a game.
Ray Allen, Sam Cassell, and Big Dog.
Mm-hmm. Bro, and Vince Carter missed a three to win that series. Like, people forget that. They're like, and plus, people don't understand. Let's go back to LeBron, man. Where do we do this thing? And I was trying to, like, make this point, like, many, many shows ago, but we had to go. Many, many people, when it comes to LeBron, or when it just comes to certain players who come along, it's this thing within human nature, just for sports, where we like to mythologize people, and we like to make them either angel or devil. And what we're doing with these guys like the LeBrons, the D-Ways, the Kobes, the people that come before them, we look at their career after they're gone and be like, oh my goodness, we were so privileged and so blessed to have seen this take place, so that we start to appreciate them more. I'm seeing this now with Kobe. I don't know if y'all are, but I'm seeing people who didn't even like Kobe, said they hated Kobe, said that Kobe was trash, all this stuff, right? Kobe's crybaby, all this stuff. They're starting to be like, oh man, I miss Kobe. Kobe was so good for the NBA. Kobe was a dog. Kobe was this and that. That's because Kobe's out of the league now, and they're looking at his career in context. The same way that all the LeBron hate just goes back to people wanting to protect Kobe and Michael's legacies. That's all it goes back to. Yep. Because LeBron coming into the NBA, he had that whole the chosen one, you know, the next Michael Jordan. So the people who are Jordan fans who mythologize Jordan immediately put a target on LeBron's back to say, if he does not do exactly everything Jordan has ever done, if he does not win six straight and doesn't lose any, if he doesn't have the killer instinct gene, which is a fucking myth because LeBron is top three in clutch shooting if you look at the statistics, and they have to, you know, make this thing where if he's not exactly like Jordan in every single way, then he can never, ever be anywhere near Michael Jordan. And I just think that's such a disservice to yourself as a basketball fan, because you're missing so much greatness. The fact that LeBron was able to beat that Pistons team by himself, I still don't know how that shit happened. I still don't know how that happened. LeBron by himself with that team around him beat those Pistons.
Yep.
And those Pistons just dismantled Shaq and Kobe's Lakers.
Yep.
So we need to, we need to stop, man. Like, just stop and take a breath and look at the entire painting. We're so focused on the strokes that are happening right now. Look at the entire canvas of this dude's career, man. He shouldn't even have went to that 2007 finals. His second best player, Mo Williams. Third best player, what, Eric Snow? Third best player, Varejao. Fourth best player, Eric Snow. Dude.
I mean, he just put up a triple-double in the finals, first ever, and it went for nothing. It averaged.
Yeah.
And it was all for nothing.
Yeah.
LeBron is so great in terms of what he's able to do on the court and in terms of people talking about him, people wanting to hate on him, that we're still overlooking what KD did in the finals. That dude was flat out. I gave him a lot of crap. You know, it was FKD, this, that, and the other. I have my issues with the move. But I've always felt that, you know, like when I said, and I told FIFO this when we were working together, Portland should have drafted KD over Lamar.
Greg Oden?
Over Oden. Yeah. I get why they did it, but, you know, because of the roster makeup. But I'm like, you can't pass up a guy like that. I watched him play in Texas. He was the truth. KD, one of my favorite players. Curry, before he became this guy, you know, when he had the taco, you know, strength fucking ankles, that was the guy. I was like, man, I love Curry. I'm like, man, it's going to be a shame Curry won't ever get to play out his career. So, you know, while I have some issues, my personal issues with that team and how they carry themselves sometimes, it's still enjoyable to watch. Now, watching KD put on the show he did, like, dude, everything he threw up was going in. He had an answer for every single thing. And
he was locked in.
And what do people talk about? LeBron. Even now, KD is second fiddle. Yeah, he's a champion. But even now, all people are going to talk about it for the next week or two will be LeBron. You know, can LeBron's legacy? Will he be the GOAT? Can KD pass LeBron now? This, that, and the other.
At the end of the day, Ken, like, obviously you can, you know, critique LeBron. You can say, you know, certain plays here were stupid, or maybe he didn't look so engaged on certain parts. At the same time, the people who are saying that, oh, you know, LeBron is trash, you know, those are like people who engage in hyperbole and say, oh, LeBron is this and that, and they love to talk about he's not a killer, you know, all that stuff. That stuff, that's all
man,
hate to
man,
me.
Man, there's in the Jordan Rules, right? The Ringer did an article on it, and they wrote about, I think it was on page 95, and they said in the triangle offense, Jordan had like 12 shots. And he was mad, and they say he was pouting, and that it was something along the lines like he didn't want to shoot, or that he was going to show Phil Jackson something. Like, people don't have those stories about him because the media was different. Like, going back to what you were saying, every single thing about LeBron has been critiqued down to, you know, the damn shoes he's wearing, and I'm clearly, you know, exaggerating, but it's like watching this guy come in as the chosen one, and immediately, like you said, oh, you got to be Jordan, because they wanted to protect Jordan. Oh, you're not Kobe, you know, and they kind of did the same thing to Kobe, but Kobe reminded them so much of Jordan that they started to kind of give him a pass. But with LeBron, it was just different, and like if he didn't have that, I think people may appreciate him a little bit more. But when you come into the league straight out of high school and people expect you to be, and I think they may have been saying that, the best player ever, you know, he's probably going to be the greatest player to ever play the game. I think he's lived up to that. This guy, his career just is what it is. Sometimes your path is already predetermined. It's not his fault he had to go play against a team loaded with a 73-9 team that added the second best player in the league. It's not his fault. A finals where as soon as he signed with Golden State, people were like, oh, yeah, they're going to win the championship.
Yep.
But the expectations on LeBron, and it was that somehow, some way, he'll figure it out. I think it kind of was unfairly put on him to be like, oh, yeah, he's the greatest player ever. He'll figure it out. And we have these unfair expectations on a guy that, look, sometimes that team is just better. No, and there's nothing you can do. Jordan wouldn't have beaten that team.
Ken, last night, we don't even have to go that far. We don't even have to say that, oh, Jordan wouldn't have beaten the Warriors. We can stay in his era and say that it is very debatable if they would have even beaten the Rockets. And LeBron is 33 going on, 34 next year. And they're favored to go back to the finals again.
Yep.
And in my opinion, in my personal opinion, we don't appreciate LeBron enough as a businessman. We don't appreciate him enough as just a person and as a role model. If you wanted to have any role model in the NBA, it's LeBron James.
He ain't got no ring.
He has no scandals. Name me one. As a player on any sport, I'll give you any sport. To the degree in which LeBron is famous, to the degree in which he is recognizable, there is no other player on earth who has ever been involved in zero scandals, have never had any off-the-court things, off-the-field, anything. Name Tiger Woods. Nope. Kobe Bryant. Nope. Rape case. MJ, gambling. Fuck out of here. LeBron James, never have you ever heard his name in, oh, LeBron has a baby mama, you know what I'm saying? Carmelo, just look what he did. I'm saying there's never been anybody at this level to never been any shit off the court. He's been the person to be able to brand himself since the time he's 18 years old. Name me a player who's ever branded himself for their entire career instead of letting the game brand them. I'll give you a perfect example of letting the game brand you. Dwight Howard, everyone thinks he's soft because the game branded him soft, and he allowed that shit to happen. LeBron James doesn't let anything go past his desk without him signing off on it. Everything, every moment, he lives up, and he's always on the right side. Just look at what happened when the dude spray painted the N-word on his gate. He was on the right side of history. You'll look back on that and say, damn, LeBron advocated? Oh, my goodness. LeBron was such a role model, and LeBron went to 7 straight finals. Why didn't we appreciate him more? Oh, because we were too busy trying to protect Jordan's legacy instead of letting LeBron live on as this player and just witness what we are seeing.
I said that like about some months ago, like last year, Ken, when I was like, you know, with the Jordan talk, I think people our age or older is like so caught in and protecting that. Oh, that's what I grew up watching. I watched Jordan's whole career. Let me hold Jordan's legacy close to me, so I don't want to even mention another athlete's name that's better than Jordan when it comes to basketball. I remember saying that. I literally remember on this show. I said plenty of times that people our age and older they want to protect that. That's what they grew up watching, so they want to protect that.
I understand it.
Yeah, he's so feared, man. Like, the Warriors had to go get KD.
They did,
KD knew he needed to go there, you know, to win. You know, and I think that's not looked at enough. And you know what? I think when we look at what we witnessed, two superstars go toe-to-toe in that finals. Unfortunately, it ended in five. But we saw two juggernauts go toe-to-toe. We saw, man, this dude threw a self alley-oop in the freaking game. He improvised because he got caught and didn't have anything else to do. So, Stephen A. said that KD and LeBron and other people in the league are looking to pass the mantle to KD. B, I think, you know, even doing this show and just in conversations, we always felt like KD was next, right? Mm-hmm. KD is a couple of years away from being at you know, on the decline. What I want to know is, who's next? Because this generation, this decade, this era is about to close. Who's next? Who got next?
Real easy for me, Ben Simmons.
You think so?
Yes, I know so.
I like that.
I don't think I know. I just needed to watch this guy for 5 minutes. He's the next guy.
All the pressure, the star, that's going to be his league, Ben Simmons.
It's going to be his league.
Okay.
And especially if Embiid can stay healthy, man, I think it's going to be easy.
Without Embiid. There's certain players, right, that it doesn't matter what you put around them. Those guys are going to play better because this guy is just that great. And there's two ways that you can do that. You can just be so great individually that it raises everybody else, a la Russell Westbrook, a la Michael Jordan, or you just naturally put people in positions to succeed, a la Magic Johnson, a la LeBron James. That's what Ben is. Ben, it don't matter. You put five scrubs out there with him, man. Them boys is going to look like something that you didn't even know that they was going to be.
There's going to be a Ben Simmons era. We had an MJ era. Yes. We had a Magic era.
Yes.
We had a Kobe.
It's going to be a Philly era.
And now it's going to be Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons got next.
Yep. Ben Simmons has next.
I believe Towns, Embiid, or Porzingis.
But what about to that level, though?
I think Greek Freak.
I don't know if he got superstar on him, B.
I think the next generation is going to be the renaissance for big men again. Because the wings, to me, coming out aren't that great. Like, I love Andrew Wiggins' game. I don't think he's Kobe. Like, he's not going to be LeBron. I think he's going to be the second option on that Minnesota team until, you know, somebody makes a decision on whether if Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins can play together. Ben Simmons is, you know, big as hell. it's a big man revolution, dude. Big men are going to revolutionize the game of basketball. Watch, we're going to see in very soon. It's going to be like, I mean, people said Ben Simmons is now 6'10", 6'11". By the way, they say he grew 2 inches. And like they say he grew 2 inches because he was like supposed to be 6'8", you know, 6'9". And the damn near 7-footer playing point guard. You got Joel Embiid, 7'2", and Joel was 7 feet coming out of college. He grew 2 inches over a summer, so I believe that shit.
Man, I and hope he can stay healthy, man.
The thing is, though, is that I think that he's going to have that kind of career where we just got to pencil it in like a AD. Like, okay, every, you know, couple of weeks, he's going to have to take like a game or two off. I'm not counting out Kawhi Leonard to take it from KD to be that next guy.
Yeah, that's I forgot about Kawhi. That's another good one. That's another good one.
Not, especially if Chris Paul goes to San Antonio, I'm really not counting that out because the one stain on Golden State's record for me, even before they lost that one game, was what would have happened if Kawhi led them to a victory game one? Kerr start coaching differently? Does KD feel some sweat in the back of his neck? You know what I'm saying? Right. Like those type of things.
Remember, they was blowing them out. They was blowing out Golden State.
Up 25 with Kawhi, and all they have is Kawhi. So the thing is, to me, if you add a Chris Paul to that situation, and you know Chris Paul can't stand Curry's ass. You know that. Chris Paul hates Curry. Chris Paul looks at Steph Curry like the fucking kid in high school who, you know, dad put him on the team because his dad's the coach, and Chris Paul's like, nigga, I was nicer than you. What the fuck you think you are? That's what Chris Paul looks at Steph Curry like, the new prima donna who ain't really about that life.
Yeah, I think Embiid has not only the game, but I think the personality. Because the NBA...
That's why I hope he stay healthy, man. Damn, I hope he don't be like an injury-prone guy.
Kawhi is Tim Duncan. He's going to be that guy that's probably going to win 4 or 5. That people won't like, you know, to see him play because they're going to be so boring. You know, Paul George, before he got hurt, I think he was on his way to being like the next guy they're going to sell. But I think the NBA, Westbrook is there, but he has a lot of maturity in terms of his game. And I think he needs the right coach in order to kind of reel him in a little bit. He's obviously a star. James Harden is a star within himself. But, you know, these guys are established. They've been in the league. But who's going to be?
Who's like a second, third year guy who's going to be that next guy?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Like, who got next? Like because when LeBron's gone and KD's gone and
Westbrook and Harden going to be kind of towards tinkering a little bit down the end of their career by the time LeBron and KD retire.
Because what is Russ, 27, 28 now?
Who?
Russ is what, like 28
years old? Yeah, I want to say maybe 27-ish, maybe, yeah.
28, James Harden, 27,
26. Because think about it like this. You remember this, B. When Jordan was on his way out, we were like, man, the NBA is in trouble. And then Kobe came. And then we were like, man, like.
We had a bunch of stars, though, Q.
But I even take you back another level. Like, even when Jordan retired the first time in 90, you know, when he retired, or so-called, you know, took a break from basketball. And you remember people were like, who's going to be the next guys? At that moment, it was Penny, Grant Hill, and it was somebody else I'm forgetting. Damn it. But Penny and Grant Hill was going to be like they was kind of starting to push off them two as like the next, you know, kind of face of the NBA when Jordan retired the first time. You know what I'm saying? Because this thing, Penny had the shoes, he had the commercials, you know,
folks loved him. That's always the key. Yep. They were accepted by black people.
Yep. And the Grant Hill had the feelers going. Like, Grant Hill was the only cat I knew back when we was coming up that was the reason why people was wearing feelers. Because, you know, when I was growing up, it was pretty much Nikes. Like, if you weren't wearing Nikes or hooping in Nikes, you wasn't hooping in nothing right. But yeah, that first one, the first Jordan retirement, it was Penny and Grant Hill. When Jordan retired in 98, yeah, like you said, Q, yeah, Iverson, Kobe's, you know, they was like the next, you know, those next guys or whatever.
And then LeBron, Melo, and Wade came along. and now they're on their way out. I mean, Curry and Draymond and Clay are kind of young, but I'm like we're LeBron has about two or three more years, man. I think he's just gonna up and quit. KD got about five or six.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron gonna like start falling off. I don't think we're gonna see him where he's like averaging 17 a game and or you know coming off the bench type of guy.
You know what? Honestly, in my opinion, I just want LeBron to go on his like ring tour when he starts to get like not to the point where he's the best in the world anymore, but still serviceable. I want him to go on like that David West tour of like, oh, he's on the Lakers this year, and oh, who gets LeBron on their bench this year? Oh, LeBron's in Milwaukee this year. LeBron's gonna take his talents to Toronto this year. Like, I want that. Like, that's David gonna be West. So fun.
Another victim of LeBron. Sam Presti is often praised for a lot of the things that he did. He drafted well, put together a team, went to the finals. You know, you lost to LeBron, but you had a nucleus. You have four guys. You had Golden State before Golden State became Golden State. But he's not receiving, I think, the type of criticism for failing to keep that team together. Because, you know, Joe Lacob and all those guys, they're going to do whatever it takes to win and keep those guys together. In Cleveland, through LeBron, Griffin and whatever the guy's name is.
Westbrook is 28, just so you know.
Okay. He's going to spend the money. I think people need to start looking at Sam Presti and what OKC failed to do as an organization.
He got to be kicking himself. He got to be.
Dude, like, Sam Presti's such an enigma for me as a GM because he does just enough. He does just the right amount of good moves for me to be like, okay, he's not trash. But then he just does the moves where it's like so mediocre. Like, oh, let me go. You know, trade Cameron Payne for Doug McDermott. Like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. You made a move, but it's a lateral move. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like I can condemn it, but at the same time, we have to go back and revisit that whole OKC situation, man, where you had literally Serge Ibaka, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, and you were so worried about luxury tax. Luxury tax. That you said, all right, we got to trade James Harden for pennies.
Steven Adams.
Like, you traded James Harden for, like, you know, a Subway discount $5 off coupon. Like, dude, you traded him for nothing. And you're seeing the dividends now. You're seeing the outcome now that Russell Westbrook is now on a team that was constructed to have a Kevin Durant. So now the team doesn't look as good because now you have a bunch of defenders and guys that really can't hit open shots, but they can lock down and defend, and they have, you know, good enough defense. But now you're seeing that Russell on that team has to put in mega, mega, mega effort just for them to make the sixth seed. And that speaks to Russell's greatness. So you're seeing that you've had damn near three superstars and a more than capable power forward and shot blocker. Mm-hmm. So, come on, dude. Like, Presti has to understand that he messed up. He really did. And I don't blame KD for the move, man. Like, I really don't blame KD for the move. I've always maintained that if we are to talk about rings and how rings are the most important thing in a player's career, then we need to understand that players are not – sometimes a player is just not trying to be the GOAT, man. Like, can we just get that out in the open sometimes and just admit that? That there are just players who what you deem as soft is not soft to him.
Q, obviously, Julius Irvin said it best in the in that commercial. You either have one or you don't. And KD is so great, he needed at least one. We were saying that about LeBron. You need at least one. We looking at Melo like and Chris Paul like, yo, what up?
Where y'all rings at?
Where y'all at?
Like, people, bro, we look at Carmelo. Like, oh, he's a bum. He never won. Oh, he's money over everything. Okay, yeah. Oh, I see. You know what I'm saying? Like everyone looked at them like they're bums, man. And not even just from the fact that like we discuss LeBron because we're comparing him to Jordan, and that's why his whole demeanor and his whole aura has always been rings. Where his ring at? Okay, he got one, but how about two? Okay, he got two, but Jordan got six. Oh, he got three, but that was only because right. Draymond got hurt. Boker got hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's everything is always qualifiers for LeBron's rings. But at the same time, a guy like KD, and people don't want to hear this because it's the dead-ass truth, KD's not trying to be the GOAT. KD doesn't care if you put him in your top five of all time. KD doesn't care if he surpasses, you know, name a small forward, Larry Bird or LeBron James. KD is worried about KD's legacy, and KD cares about himself. He does not give a care in the world if you think that Kevin Durant is not a top three small forward. And you'd be stupid to think he's not going to end up being a top three small forward statistically and just eye test wise. But at the same time, his acumen in this championship run was very, very blatant in the fact that he affected the game in the only way that he could. The way he shoots the ball, it's 9 feet in the air. That's something that you can't teach. And that was his team.
Higher than that. His release point is at 12 feet.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Like how do you guard that?
You don't. You really don't. He only can miss. You can't guard it. He can just miss. And that's it.
I'll say this. I think what Sam Presti didn't do, I think OKC could have at least had two by now. And I think that
stop organization, blaming Presti. Blame Clay Bennett.
That organization will go down as that move, those moves, Clay Bennett, Sam Presti, whoever, will go down as one of the colossal failures in NBA history to let that much talent just go out into the league like that.
Yeah, I really do think we'll look back on it and be like, damn, they had James Harden, Serge Ibaka. We're
starting it here first on Dead End Sports. Look, we've approached a lot of topics here that started here, and then eventually everybody catch on. We're starting here. Sam Presti or Clay Bennett, whoever you want to blame, OKC failed. It was a failure. It was a colossal failure. And they need to receive criticism for it.
People always put Jordan on this such high pedestal, but just like, nigga, it was great. It was other great, you know, like, you could put Magic in that conversation too, man. Magic was a winner. Magic, the teams he lost to in the finals was hell. You can list them as probably one of the top 10 greatest NBA teams of all time, the teams that he lost to.
Yeah. The thing is, the only thing is, I think the reason why we mythologize Jordan so much is just the fact that he was probably, one, just in my opinion, a more complete player than Magic, because that defensive side of the ball was never Magic's strength. And Michael, he put in that work for both sides of the ball. And once he got, you know, Scotty, and once he got Phil, he kind of unlocked that code that Magic had to making everyone around him better. So you already have, you know, probably a more complete player, a better player in Jordan. And then you add the thing that made Magic. Within Jordan, not the passing, because that's not there, but just the intangible to make those around you better. I think that's why people put Jordan on that pedestal. And plus, everyone looks at the 6-for-6 as, like, you know, the most holy accomplishment, which it is, because I do think that there was probably more competition in the 90s than the 80s. But at the same time, we can't take away from Magic going to 9, man, and winning with 5.
And that's, it's kind of crazy.
That's a lot of work, man. Like,
that is, bro, like, people don't understand, dude, that, like, when you play basketball or when you play a sport, it's a dedication to that shit.
Thank you.
People really think that these guys just don't do shit, but, you know, go to practice.
than just play ball. No, my nigga, like, you have to fucking train. You have to put in those hours, those unseen hours.
These guys are not good for no reason. Like, they just didn't, they wasn't born just, oh, you can play basketball. Like, oh, these dudes put in work. It's work. It's mentally and physically draining. Every, for you to be playing basketball damn near every day from November to possibly June, that's freaking wearing and tearing on your body, man, and physically draining. I don't care what nobody say.
Dude, like, that shit, like, in my opinion, the NBA has the shortest offseason, hands down. Because when you think about that shit, dude, you already got – basketball never stops. Because every 4 years, what, you got the Olympics? Then you got to worry about, like, the qualifying leagues. Then you got to worry about just that as soon as you're, like, done with your vacation. Because most players take a 1 to 2 week vacation.
And then you back in – training camp starts.
Summer league for the fucking college players starts in fucking, what, July or something?
Yep.
Like, now basketball never stops. It is a all year round thing. So these guys, you know, fans think that these dudes just are born with this shit and they just jumpers and they're born with this passing gene. No, you have to put in work, dude. Every fucking year you put in work just to be able to keep up with the competition, because there's somebody who's below you that's trying to get ahead of
you. That's why, and you know, people always throw out, like you were just saying, Michael Jordan, the 6-0, you know, and I was telling Ken, you know, I was even telling my dad this, like, for LeBron James to go to 7 straight NBA finals, it's impressive. I don't care what his record is, but, like, for you to be mentally and physically draining playing basketball that many times, including a couple of USA trips too, Olympic trips, and you still going to the finals, man, that's draining, man. That's freaking draining.
Final question, because I know we're running late here, but final question. How many more years does LeBron have left in dominating the East?
Three to four.
Because Kyrie's only 24.
That's what I thought. That's where I was going. It all depends on Kyrie. If Kyrie can take that next level in his game, which I think he still has another level or two to go, because
he's not,
I believe,
in his prime. He's 3 years away from the prime.
He's not, man. Like, he's not. And people, like, it's crazy because Kyrie's been such a part of the NBA in my life for, like, the last, like, 4 some years. So it's like, you know, you think he's like 28, 29. You're 24, dude. 24. Like, he's still putting it together. Like,
I just need it. He could go 5. If he get in the post, man, I need him to go into the post. I think he can play up to 5.
I think it's like jumpers. I think it's the mid range jumper that's really going to extend his career, dude.
I
was just saying he's been posting a little more definitely than what he used to post. Often he used to post. I don't think he's going to just start going to the block just all the time. That is, you know,
I think he will. I think he will. Look, we all know. We all get into Ken's age, and you can't really eat very well. You know what I'm saying? So when he get up there, because, look, I think LeBron is going to play until he's 40, 41. I think he's going to have 20, 22 year
coming.
I don't think so.
I can see him just, like, being tired of dominating and just, like, doing something else, you know, becoming an owner or something, like he said he want to be. I can see him leaving a little bit before it's his time.
Even still, he's what, 14 years into the league right now. He's gonna
be I give him 38.
Okay, that's still 7 years. So if you say
you're saying 40 something though. So you saying he gonna play like 10 more years?
I'm saying he's going to play like 8-9 years. That's 5 or 9 more.
I said 38. He's 33 now, so that's 5 years. That's doable. That's 38.
He's going to play more than that.
I truly believe that LeBron James, just by his conditioning and the specimen that he is, him at 40 years old is like somebody at 35. Like, honestly,
LeBron gets another title, he's going to retire.
I don't think so.
I don't see that.
Because that wouldn't, just like from what we've seen, that would entail that they just beat Golden State, because I don't see any team out of the West coming out of the West. So that would mean that they beat Golden State. So why wouldn't he go back and want to beat them twice? That would further his career, and that would probably make him top one, top two for me, easily. It should be interesting, man. The career of LeBron James, man, we need to appreciate this while we still got it, man.
It's been one of the most interesting basketball eras of all time, centered around one player.
Yeah, man.
And it's crazy.
He is the staple of our league.
I don't see there ever being another player that's as polarizing as LeBron James to enter the league like this. I just don't ever see it, man. And I think at some point he will be crowned the greatest of all time once people really sit back and analyze what he's done, you know, in his career. But this guy, man, we witnessed something special. And some people are starting to appreciate it, but I think a lot of people will appreciate it after it's said and done. So, anyway, well, we were wrong, all three of us. B was right. But it is what it is. You know, can't get them all.